If you know the fish tank, then you also have to know our friends at Planet Protein.
That's right, Big Seth, and Planet Protein is back and better than ever. They're gearing up for the momentous release of their Chocolate Magic Protein Shake, now completely sugar-free and free of sugar alcohols.
But still the same great taste, Juice. And Planet Protein is locally manufactured right here in South Florida. And to top it off, the new Chocolate Magic 2-pound bags feature a wooden scoop and eco-conscious packaging to protect our beautiful oceans.
Hey, no doubt, Seth. In fact, they're so local that my man Anthony, the COO of Planet Protein, is here to tell you why their product is not just good, but good for you.
That's right. Thanks for having me. Had to come down and tell it like it is. We produce Chocolate Magic right here in South Florida with our community in mind on the inside and outside of the bag. Eco-conscious materials, only 8 real ingredients, 4 of which are superfoods, put you in the prime position to conquer your day.
So if you're ready to live a clean and ethical nutritional lifestyle, then visit planetprotein.com now. And remember to use the code FISHTANK to receive 20% off all of your Planet Protein purchases.
And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at @planet_protein.
Bam! If you're looking to buy or sell a vehicle, AutoNation is where you want to go. They are the largest auto retailer from coast to coast.
And their friendly and knowledgeable staff here in South Florida will help you save big on huge selections of new cars, trucks, SUVs, Toyota, Honda, Chevrolet, Mercedes-Benz, and much more.
Yeah, Juice, but if you're like me and you're looking to buy pre-owned, you know, I got 186,000 miles on the Toyota right now. But if you're looking to buy pre-owned, you can shop AutoNation's huge selection of one-price pre-owned vehicles. They are all clearly marked with one price, their lowest price guaranteed.
Yeah, or if you just want to get rid of that old car, turn it into cash today, get top dollar offer and a check the same day, they'll buy your car with no purchase necessary.
And if your check engine light is on, I got that going on as well. Right now, get the services you need at low AutoNation prices. Oil changes, tires, batteries, and more, all for less.
Call or visit AutoNation.com to schedule your appointment today.
And if you are in the market for a new car, DM us at the TheFishTank81 on Twitter. Hopefully you're already following us at TheFishTank81 on Twitter, and we will get your information to an AutoNation senior manager so they can reach out to you directly and walk you through the buying process.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Golf fans, number one, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to season 2 of the Fish Tank. Seth Levitt here with my main man, OJ McDuffie. Juice, how we doing today, man?
What's up, Big Seth?
Everything is good, Juice. I feel like we have made the big time today. We have gone legit.
Yes, we have.
We've gone from podcast to national entity.
That's
here,
right,
with our
man.
Guest.
That's right. We're not local anymore.
Nah, we are not local. We are international, worldwide, I guess,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Is that what we
say? Oh, yeah.
The worldwide leader?
Oh, yeah.
With our guest straight from ESPN, Jeff Darlington dives in the tank. What's up, Jeff?
Sometimes I have to do ESPN hits for like ESPN Australia,
yeah,
and stuff like that. And I'm like, do I do the accent? Like, how do I handle
the
this?
The accent
situation?
Would be sweet. How is your Australian?
No, not good
accent?
At all. Not terrible.
Then don't
I sound
do
like
it.
The Geico lizard. I don't even know if he's Australian.
That lizard is hard, though, man.
He's
that
killing
dude
it.
Is, yeah,
he's killing it.
He's making it happen.
No,
so,
man.
Well, so Juice, I got a call from Ethan. He's like, hey, I was kicking it with Jeff Darlington. And I'm like, Jeff's local?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And you said you never left.
Never left. Why would I leave? Where am I going to go? Bristol? Seriously, you know?
That was not part of the deal?
No, man. After college, I came down here for my first job was covering, I was at the Orlando Sentinel, right? I was still in school, actually. I was getting like 40 grand a year working at the Orlando Sentinel in college. Can
right.
you imagine
that's
that?
A that's a lot
some,
of money right
that's
there.
A, that's real
paid
money.
Right
you know,
there.
Do you
that's
know what
paid.
I did? I drew, not to completely segue right out of the gates, but I got that job. I might as well be like one of those irresponsible NFL players. Oh, it was 40
yeah,
grand.
$40,000
like,
that's
a lot of money
now.
In college. I mean, it's a
crazy
lot of money now.
Money.
But I drove to the Infinity dealership in Orlando and bought a G35.
Oh,
what am I
doing?
What am I doing? It was like a $45,000 car.
I was just saying, you know how much pizza? And he probably bought out the bar
every time.
Night. Right, yeah.
Every single time.
That's anyway, the cool part about
so,
it. Yeah.
So, but my first job, like 6 months out of college, I got hired by the Palm Beach Post to cover the Dolphins, and I haven't left since. Yeah, I mean, I went to the Miami Herald, then the NFL Network, and no one was like, hey, we need you to move here. So I'm like, I'm not moving.
And you weren't offering it.
No. I remember one time ESPN, when I was getting hired there, they asked, would you move if we asked you? And I'm like, I'm not saying no,
right?
But I am saying that'd be the hardest decision I've ever made.
Can
in my
you repeat
life.
The question?
Yeah, exactly.
That's too funny. So Jules, I gotta say, and we'll get into it, and certainly Jeff is a wealth of information here and covered the Dolphins for a long, long time and continues to have great stuff, even though he's covering everybody and not just the Dolphins. But above and beyond that, so. And you know how I talk about the fact that when I first left the team, there's guys that I didn't realize we talked about with Ronnie Brown or Channing, guys that I never truly worked with because I was already working for JT and with the foundation. I didn't realize until I texted the other day, you started covering the team in 2005.
We just missed each other.
Yeah, so we just, but I felt like I was a PR guy when Jeff was covering the team, and
was,
in some ways I was.
When did you finish?
2004 offseason.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I left right before. But you were still bottom dropped out.
But you were still around and with JT.
I was around a lot, and we've talked about it on the show. I had more juice in that building after I left early on, especially with Coach Saban, just because JT was held. Yeah, absolutely. So but Jeff was legendary, not necessarily for the way he covered the team. He did a nice job. I kind of thought, to be honest with you, I'd see him in the press box and what have you. Always the best dressed guy in the press box, which is not hard to do.
That's like being the least guilty criminal. You're still guilty, bro.
Basically, he brushed his hair, you know. But so always the best dressed guy. But I was like, I think Jeff is just a young guy who doesn't give a shit. He's got a cool job, and really, he just can't wait for the game to end so he can get out to Los Olas.
Right.
And maybe there was some truth to that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you know, there were legendary stories coming out of the Darlington compound in those days. I don't know if you ever remember Joe Rose was sponsoring the Bangy Dangy part.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that.
Yeah.
Are we so old now that like people haven't heard about that party? Because that was like, you know, the Animal House of parties. Like you talk to kids now, they haven't watched Animal House, but like that party.
Well, I only heard about it through Joe, and then, you know, we'd want to ask, and you always had that sly little grin.
So what happened? I lived with. So I broke up with my girlfriend that I moved down here with, and I ended
that
up...
That usually happens.
Yeah, exactly. So true.
You come to South Florida and things...
Oh, my gosh, man.
How long did that take?
But it was like 6 months.
Yeah, okay.
That's pretty good.
That's a good run.
But it is funny because you say, you know, I was like, no, when people come down here, Miami's not that distracting. It's just like any other... This is not like any other city, right? But no, beyond that, so we break up, and I'm like, I didn't really... When I moved down here, like, I had some couple friends with her, but it wasn't like... I didn't have any boys down here or anything like that. Most of my friends were all in the other coast of Florida. So I ended up moving in this house that I found on Craigslist. It was it was like sounds creepy as hell, but it was like we're just four guys. They were looking for a fifth. We have four young professionals. We like to keep it clean, but we like to get dirty. We like to party. Like, it was like right up my alley. So I'm like, all right, I'll go check this out. So I go over there, and right away we're just boys, and we just hit it. Like every night, one of my buddies was a rep for Budweiser, and he had like the corporate card.
Now so it makes
he
sense.
He had to spend $2,000 a week. Like he had to. It was Lord. Like, and this is before
it was a requirement.
This is before like the recession, everything like dropped out and got responsible. Like this was like the golden age of at this point. It was like 2006, 2007, and we had to spend like $2,000. A week. And I remember one time he's like, man, I got like 800 in the bank. What are we going to do? And me and him went to Hard Rock with a bottle of Grey Goose in front of each of us, just staring at each other like, man, I just want to go home. But the Bangy Dangy. So Joe was like, man, this house you live in, like it sounds unbelievable on the radio.
So it didn't take Joe long to find out about what was going on.
Every time I'm on the radio, he's like, man, this house, it sounds like it's unbelievable. Like, what do you got going on over there?
He just really wanted to be invited.
Topless. I'm like, it's not that crazy, Joe. Like, not every
right.
night.
Yeah, right.
so he's like, let's have a party. We'll call it the Bangy Dangy, and we'll get Bud Light Lime to sponsor it. The Bud Light Lime Bangy Dangy. I'm like, let's do it. So we set this date, and we talk about every time I'm on the air that we're going to have it. And I don't think he thought I was serious. And maybe he didn't think it was mutual. Because the day of the party, we had already hired two bands to play. I brought in Porto Potties. Like, I was like, we're going to go.
The real deal.
We got like an ice luge. We got all this stuff. But we're still, you know, like how much booze we're going to have, that kind of thing. Joe calls me, bro, you at home? I'm like, yeah, I'm at home. Not 15 seconds later, the entire semi-trailer, the Budweiser semi-trailer, pulls up in front of my house. And it was off Riverland Road. And we had like this big yard. It was a shit house. I mean, it was like
that was before you guys all moved in.
Well, I think we pretty much put the dent in the house. But But it rolls up, and they just start wheeling dollies of booze out of the thing. And then Joe comes over with his kids, old school style, like Vince Vaughn in Old School. He comes in, he's got one kid, he's holding them, and they're each carrying
Father
like
these, of the Year.
They're carrying like magnums of Grey Goose into the house, and Joe looks at the beer and he goes, "Bro, that's not enough." It was a shit ton of beer. Oh. So I get another call like a half hour later.
He sent another delivery?
He goes, "Hey, bro, do you got a pickup truck?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I got a pickup truck." He goes, "Go to Total Wine." I go to Total Wine, and there's just these guys rolling out kegs, putting them in the back.
And they talked about it incessantly.
The party was unbelievable. It was
And it was open? Like, it was just, he broadcast it on the air? And
No. Okay. But I had, like, my boys in the house were like, this is in the days of MySpace. They're just sending messages to everybody on MySpace, like, come to this party. I mean, so we had like a mile of cars going down. Joe, at one point, came up to me and goes, "Bro, I gotta go." And I'm like, "Why?" He goes, "Because my son is here."
He brought, oh, Garen shows up at the party? I love it.
And that was when he had to leave. It was epic. It was an
funny.
Epic. I mean, it was an epic, epic party.
I remember Zach Kranz talked about it because I think he stayed after Joe bounced because he said he spent too
Zach's
long
still
looking
young
for
in
a
the game.
Parking
yeah.
space.
It was, I got a grin thinking about that night. It was unbelievable. It was far better than we can even talk about.
Damn, better than
even
mean,
on a podcast.
College. Yeah, better than college parties. Yeah. A little more money, a little more booze.
That's right.
Yeah, better quality.
Yeah,
everything.
A little more experience.
Exactly
a little
right.
more understanding of the game. If you will, Juice.
So in the midst of all that, you know that Joe Jeff was certainly making news that way, but he was also covering the like. So it was 2005 to 2011.
Right.
Yeah. So,
my first day on the job was when Ricky Williams came back.
Wow.
It was that press conference when he came in real skinny.
Yeah.
That was my first day on the job.
And bald.
Yeah.
Yeah, real
and that
skinny
was a,
and bald.
That, and that was a 100% foreshadowing of all the shit show craziness that was to come.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, actually, he wasn't bald at that point. At that point, it started to grow back, right?
I think it was like nappy.
Nappy.
It was
yeah.
I mean, he looked like he just came out of the woods.
Forest.
Because he did. Yeah, because that's exactly what he did. Yeah, so you covered, I mean, we're talking Saban.
Yeah.
Certainly the cup of coffee that Cam Cameron had
Cam
when
Cameron.
He was here.
Yeah, that was fun.
And
JT, he loved JT.
He did. We're going to definitely have to talk about that wonderful relationship they had. Unbelievable times.
Yeah. Sperano, that was a Parcells. I remember when I realized Parcells was leaving, I went around the practice.
When he took the job is probably when you figured out.
Right.
Just start counting down.
But like for real, like I was watching practice, but I like left a pad or something in my car and you walk around and the players parking lot's over there. Practice is going on. Everybody's out there. I look over in the players parking lot. I swear to God, shit you not, Cadillac trunk is open. Parcells is standing in the parking lot with a driver swinging it.
Come on.
Practicing his swing in the parking lot. I'm like, literally the next day, he announced that Jeff Ireland was taking over.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That was it. He's already on vacation that day, huh?
He was fucking on vacation. Don't get me started.
Him and Dan Henning were going over to Grand Oaks every day to
every
play
day.
Nine.
Jeff, he didn't travel to road games.
Yeah.
Now, Jimmy Johnson was offered that deal by Wayne Huizenga to make him stay, if you remember that. Well, that was you
same
know,
kind of
your
deal?
Days. Well, Jimmy was going to leave, and Wayne said, look, we're so close, you know, and they believed they were at that point. And actually, Danny, I think, even said, look, you know, forget whatever's going on between the two of us. Like, if you fucking leave now, we're all starting over. And Wayne said, what do we need to do? You can just stay, just coach home games.
Yeah.
And Jimmy's like, Wayne, I can't.
Coach home games.
Just coach home games.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well,
that's basically the deal that Wayne gave.
Parcells, that motherfucker, all he did was home games.
And how brilliant was that shit that Sexton did where he put the clause in the contract that if ownership changed, he would get all the money that he was owed to him and he could leave with no consequences.
But yet he's going to question other people's commitment.
No, Parcells, you know what's a bummer is that I grew up in New Jersey, so I was real big. I like
that is a bummer, man.
86 and 90, I mean, I love those years. Like, I don't really root for teams, but like that, those Giants teams were like my favorite teams just from my childhood. And I wanted to love Parcells. And it was probably just because I caught him at the wrong time, but I couldn't stand his era down here.
Right.
I mean, he was just.
It was bad.
It was bad.
Really bad.
JT and I always say, don't meet your heroes.
Right.
That's the advice. For
opinion,
those
right?
of you listening, don't meet your heroes.
Man, I got stories about that too. But we can...
so, Jeff, honestly, you obviously, you know, you cut your teeth as a beat writer down here, you know, and, you know, had some very interesting seasons, you know, to say
man.
The least, man. Let's talk about that year with Nick Saban.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be very interesting. We all know now how interesting Nick Saban really is.
You know what, though? I loved it. That was always the biggest misconception, I think, that everybody always come up to me, oh, man, he hates the media. I'm like, no, he hates everybody. Like, the second you start taking it personal from him, then that's the second that you lose it. Like,
kind of what Shannon said.
Yeah. I loved walking into press conferences with him because he was going to fill your notebook. I remember in 2001 when I was at Florida with Steve Spurrier. Everything that he said ended up in the newspaper the next day. Every single word. Like, Cam Cameron would come in and talk for 2 hours. He didn't say shit.
The words would disappear off the page.
Nick Saban would come in and, like, you'd ask him a question about the backup guard. He'd end up being like, he'd take that question and say whatever he had planned. Right. And by the end of it, he's screaming about the team, and it had nothing to do with the question you asked. It was awesome.
And it didn't even matter, right?
I loved it. I remember one time he came in. It was like something had happened. There was a question that needed to be asked. And he comes in. He did some, like, gesture, like, who's going to ask it? And he did some weird gesture.
The claw. Do you know what the claw is?
It was the claw.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not in the mood.
What was that?
And Greg Bedard, who now with MMQ. No, what is Greg doing now? Greg was at the Palm Beach Post at the time, and he just slowly, we're all sitting there, and just slowly raised his hand. Like, I'll ask it, you know, like, but
give me the claw, coach.
But I think we all understood that he was going to fill your notebook. He was going to motherfuck you in that press conference, and he's going to walk out. And he's going to do the same thing to Harvey Green down the hall.
Right. Right.
Twice.
Harvey took it the worst of anybody.
He did. And got on this show and just talked about what a great guy he was.
Correct.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, it is funny.
Harvey's
position, though, in some ways, I think Harvey's position, and maybe it was perspective that was growing at, because after Nick came Cam, and then some other, you know, instances that he had with coaches, that he said at least you knew where Nick was coming.
Exactly. And he didn't like that about Cam.
He knew where he was coming from, and he said, and also that Nick, if you went and told Nick what you felt as a PR guy and gave him your advice, he might motherfuck you for it. But then he would actually think about it and listen, and you might actually see him take your advice.
Right. Yeah.
Where there were other coaches that just knew more than you did,
yep.
And then that's when he felt that, you know, he had a tough time. So that was kind of Harvey's position.
Gase was a little bit like that. Cam was not. Sperano was a little bit like that.
And Philbin was more like Cam.
And Philbin was Cam, yeah, 100%.
Cam Jr.
Which is...
Although he won some games, so I can't, you know, in fairness to him. Philbin won...
He did?
Well, Cam won one.
Cam won one. One game.
Yeah.
One of my favorite games of all time. Man. Right. Cleo Lemon to Greg Camarillo. What did Cephalo call him? Nick Camarillo.
I love Rich Camarillo.
Rich Camarillo.
Was that him or was that Mad Dog? I forget. But
No, that was Cephalo. Don't you dare speak of Mad Dog in that. No.
Who, by the way, I think gave the Bangy Dangy its name.
He did. What goes on at a Bangy Dangy?
That was great. It's a great soundbite still to this day.
Too funny. So, but Saban never made you cry because, you know, you were around when he did make a guy cry.
So, Manny Wright, I got my first APSC, no, second, because when Ron Zook went and tried to fight that fraternity back in Florida, I got an award for that too. It's amazing the shit that you get awards for in this business.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about the reporter. It's about the shit that you cover. That's what gets you the awards.
Right. You're only as good as their craziness.
Well, 100%, man. If I was at Florida during this national championship run, I wouldn't have had any good jobs coming, but I covered a shit show.
Right.
And the same down here in Miami. So all you aspiring journalists, don't cover the good stuff.
Right.
You'll find the crazy people. Go get yourself a job with the Jets.
One of your, a fan favorite here at the Five Reasons Sports Network, but a guy you work with, Armando Salguero, used to even tell me, he goes, what benefits me is the team's either really, really good or really, really bad.
He said it every day.
Yeah.
Yep.
8-8 does nothing for my business.
That's right. But what were we talking about? Manny Wright.
Manny Wright.
So that was like one of my first awards that I'd gotten was Manny Wright. Saban's like, I don't know where Manny is, you know. He was sitting in his press conference and everybody's kind of sitting there just taking it. I'm like, well, this is weird. Something's off here. So I'm like, I go into like stealth reporter mode back when I was like ambitious. Now I just go grab a microphone and say some shit on TV. And
that's it in 30 seconds.
But so I go over to Manny's neighborhood. I found out where he lived.
Oh man, you really went in.
Dude. And I see a for rent sign on his window. I'm like, oh, that's weird too. So I call the number on the for rent sign. And the landlord's like, yeah, the Dolphins have been paying his rent for the past 4 months. Like, he doesn't have any money, and it was really sad. I mean, it was obviously like, and I'm leaving, and I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. Like, what do I, you know? And I'm leaving the neighborhood, and I see Manny's truck coming this way, and I'm like, shit, I got to go talk to him. So I spin around, but I couldn't find where his truck went in the neighborhood, and there were these sushi menus on all the doors. You know, they go around and put the menus on the doors. So I went to every door that didn't have a sushi menu because that meant the person had just gotten home, and I knocked on every door that did not have a sushi menu.
How about that reporting 101?
Until a guy said, oh, Manny, yeah, he lives right there. I'm his cousin. I walk over and I knock on the door, and Manny comes to the door, and he just tells me everything.
Wow.
I mean, everything.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Now, what kind of Does it take some gumption? Like, you know, is there any thought process? Like, fuck, I don't know if I can knock on this door.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I just wonder what's going through your head as you're about to go ask this guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think, especially when, you know, like I was raised by my parents to be very like, I think that that's what's important about it. When you do knock on the door, you have to be extremely courteous, extremely respectful. You understand that you're trying to do a job, but at the same time, you're covering a human being. It's mm-hmm. always about their story. And that was always what it was. I mean, even with Manny, it's like, hey, if you tell me to leave right now, I'm out. I'm out. You know, it's equivalent of me calling your phone. If you don't pick up, same kind of thing. And I remember I did it at Ronnie Brown's house. When he had his contract hold out, I drove to Atlanta and knocked on his door. Next thing you know, I'm sitting next
Ronnie's
to
easy though, man.
On the couch,
hey,
right.
Come on in.
But that was like one of the first ones was knocking on his door. Another time, I'm just going to say, I'll just say a Dolphin source had told me, I texted him when Brett Favre was considering, I don't even remember this. There was a second when the Dolphins were interested in Brett Favre or whatever. Yep. So someone had told me that I wouldn't close the door on it. And it was an important enough person that I was like, whoa. But he's like, but you can't report that.
Mm.
And I'm like, well, I can't report it if it came from you.
Right.
What if it came from Brett Favre? So I flew to New Orleans and I drove to Hattiesburg and I slept in my car outside of Brett Favre's house.
Holy shit.
And I followed every
stalker,
car.
Jeff Darlington
right,
in the house.
Exactly. I swear, man, it's creepy. And I followed every car that until the car was Favre in the car and he was driving to his high school. And I get out of the car and I'm like, Brett. My name's Jeff Darlington. I'm from the Miami Herald. He goes, Miami, don't you have anything better to do if you're from Miami? And I go, not if you're willing to come back to the NFL, I don't. And he's like, what? And I was like, you know, I've been told by a very authoritative person in Miami that he's interested in having you back. And he's like, no, no. And he walks to his car and he's going to get in his car. And he turns to me and it was unbelievable, man. He had the devil and the angel on the shoulders. And he turns to me, he goes, so they said they're interested?
Sure, that's awesome.
Oh, that is really great.
But sometimes you got to do that. It's crazy. And I think it's just all about finding a way to show respect for the people and give them privacy when it's warranted and requested. And at other times, you know.
Yeah.
Leads to some good shit.
that is classic, though, that there was that thing. There's that competitor and that gambler there.
Oh, man.
I was like, well, wait a minute.
But he also could barely walk, man. He had this, like, you could tell his back was shot. And I remember texting the person right after, and I was like, hey, man, I ended up going to Hattiesburg and checking on Favre. You're not going to sign
him. Yeah, you don't want it.
He goes, I could have told you that. I heard that yesterday, but good job.
Going
to I was like, thanks.
So now, do you tell the Herald, or do you just book the flight and turn in the expense report later?
So it was funny. I got to the point where I was, you know, I kind of had to do it myself and bite the bullet if it didn't work out.
But it was worth it.
I got a bunch of them, these stories that eventually they understood. I'm trying to remember what story it was. So Jason Cole, when he left the Herald, I was at the Palm Beach Post and the job was open.
He probably slept out in front of a few people's houses.
100%.
Yeah.
Hey, Jason Cole, though, he doesn't leave when they ask you to. No. That's the difference between me and Jason.
Oh, man, that's a whole other set of stories.
But when I got the job at the Miami Herald, it was because of one of those stories. And I guess I had beaten the reporters that day. And it was like, I think it was the Manny Wright story. And the sports editor walked in. You guys say this guy's too young. And he walked in. He put them. Then how the hell did he just beat us all today?
That's old school, man. I love that.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
Damn right.
That's very, very cool. And you know, if nothing else, I guess you're investing.
Juice says that now, man. He would knock me out.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. That's really good for this podcast. He would not have been happy with you then.
Yeah, you're on the dark side now with me, though. Now you get it.
Got to know that stuff. But that is too funny. And it's an investment in your future, right? I imagine.
Yeah, that
would. Sit
that's
there
it.
And be nice to everybody and still be working at the Miami Herald. No disrespect to those who are.
No, it's funny too, the difference in how social media has changed. There's certain things you can and can't do now that you could do then. Before, there was this veil, like there was this curtain that was closed on everything, and it was our job to like at least try to find out what was going on behind it. Whereas now,
you just wait for those guys to post.
Yeah. And if they don't, it's clear that they don't want to. And
right.
It's just a different, it's kind of
it's
a different
crazy.
Ball game now.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I'm not a PR guy in this age. That's
dude,
for
right?
sure.
So many fires you have to put out.
Oh, unbelievable. Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember Jeff Ireland said the rule of general managers, you expect three fires a day. Wow. I expect three fires a day.
That's well. There's probably a few other rules that he should have been paying more attention to. Right. That's a whole other set of circumstances. So, you know, we had a few guests here in the tank that were part of Saban's first draft class, and you mentioned Ronnie, who was really wonderful in the tank. And I mean, Ronnie's just one of the nicest human beings on the planet.
No question.
But he came in and brought it. You know, which I think he waited. He listened to what some of the other guys did. And then he brought it.
That's him. He's got some edge back there. Yeah, he just don't really
there
see
is.
It.
It was shocking.
Yeah.
It really was, especially when he said that he and Channing were kind of the same personality. And we're
right,
like, hold on, right?
Bullshit. You can think that, right?
Now you're just lying on us right
exactly.
now.
Yeah, exactly.
But speaking of the other guy,
Channing Crowder, one of my favorite humans on the planet.
Yeah. So what was that like covering a young Channing Crowder?
Dude, I covered every game. I've covered him at Florida.
Right.
Every single game.
Yeah. And he talked about his arrests with a plural. So
arrests. And I was the guy. Channing, I was the one who was out front with all those. But him and his mom would always tell me that they respected, but that I would just go. I just told the facts and got out. There was no opinion involved.
But were you also at the same clubs that Channing was breaking up at 2 a.m?
look at me. You think this guy's at those clubs?
Pastor Troy, you weren't at the Pastor Troy concert?
I ended up bringing Channing to like one of the fraternity house parties near my, because we became pretty tight. And I remember I brought him to a party, like a fraternity house party, which is very different than the Palace nightclub where he was hanging out. And I remember I was like, hey, Channing, I think you got to go. Like, it was like, it's just a different level of behavior.
Was his shirt on or off at that point in time?
It was on. It was on. But no. So I met Channing. He was working at a car wash at UF, and he was barely even a prospect. Like, he had hurt his knee, so he had to like sit out or whatever. And there was a guy, Brian Crum, who was the hotshot recruit, and he was coming in. And someone had told me that they go out. I was looking for unique stories, and they go out and they wrestle hogs out in the woods in Gainesville. And he said Channing Crowder and Brian Crum. But Crum was the hot shit. So I went up to Brian and was like, hey, I heard you do this. And he just blew me off. And I went up to Channing and I'm like, hey, Channing, I heard you do this thing where you go out in the woods. And he's like, yeah, man, you want to go? And I didn't even know. This is the first time I met him. He's like, yeah, I'll pick you up. He picks me up in his girlfriend's car that the door, I swear to God, you couldn't open it. It was like completely bashed in. I'm like, what happened here? He's like,
I don't know. Dukes of Hazzard it and go climb.
I had to go to the back seat, and we drive out into the woods, and I brought a cameraman from the Orlando Sentinel, and I brought a Gators t-shirt, and he jumped on this hog and he wrapped the t-shirt around the hog, and he was chasing these hogs out in the woods. And I write this whole story about, like, you know, watch out, nature, the freak has arrived. And it was like across the front page of the Orlando Sentinel on the day that they were playing the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Oh, wow.
And he had, in the span of when I went with him to write the story, and that point, he had blown up. He became a monster, SEC Freshman of the Year. But in the span, it was just this great fortune.
He was just the car wash kid.
I mean, that was great.
Yeah. It was a car wash kid, but we were boys from that day. And so across the front page, it says Suey, you know, like that's all Razorback. And it's a picture of Channing jumping after this hog. And Ron Zook was so pissed off that he made Channing, because he broke the rules and went out and did something with a reporter away from the facility.
Right.
And all these fans were upset that he might have gotten hurt and all this stuff. And it was before anybody even knew who he was.
Right. Sure.
And he made him sit next to Zook on the way home and would never let him talk to the reporters.
Wait,
again.
He had to sit next to him?
Yeah. He got gag ordered and wasn't. And all the reporters were pissed at me because I got him gag ordered. And Channing, after the practice,
that's their
was like,
problem.
Jeff, you know, you and me, bro. And he was like yelling this at practice and people were like pulling him away. Like, it was like this big deal. But
I can't even imagine trying to muzzle Channing at
that
stage.
Boys after that. Yeah,
that's fun. So who did you get the call from? Like, was it Steve McClain at the time, or who would have been the PR?
Yeah.
You know, the SID.
He was pissed. The story was so good, though. It was like one of my favorite stories of this day.
Do we have that photo? We got to find that photo of Channing wrestling the hog. That is
but that led to a lot of stories with Channing.
So then when he shows up,
we got the job.
How excited were you that he shows up?
I didn't get. I wasn't the Dolphins.
Oh, you weren't here yet.
I don't. It was literally within weeks of when he got drafted and I got the job. I don't remember who got what first, but it was like, and we came down.
Reunited.
Yeah, and we
celebrated together.
Man, I remember one time we went to a golf course. This is later on, and there's two golf stories, only one that I can share, and one's still pretty. He's getting these mini bottles of booze the whole round, you know, these little bottles. And he had them with him. We weren't even buying them. He just had them brought some.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, I'm, you know, he's a big dude, and I'm trying to, like, hang with him, but we are ripped. And we play 18, and he's like, let's play another 9. And we pick up this guy who I ended up later getting to know completely separate, And we picked up this fourth guy because the one guy had to leave. And this fourth guy, and me and Channing were so cocky and had been drinking, we bet them $20 a hole for those nine holes.
Oh, boy.
Well, we had to pay them $180.
I said, what'd that cost you?
But on the 13th hole at Plantation Preserve, there should be a plaque in my honor because I was standing over a putt, and we were ripped. And I'm standing over the putt, and I back off of it to read it, right? And all of a sudden, I'm underwater. I didn't know what happened. I'm just underwater. I don't even know that it's an island green and I'm underwater. And I come up and I'm like, am I dead? Like what happened? And I come up and I swim myself to the top of the preserve, right? And there's all these weeds and stuff. And I come out, my head comes up and Channing is standing over the top of the green and he's over the island, like over the water. He's standing on the green, over the water, looking down at me. He goes, "Hey Jeff, why are you swimming? We're trying to golf."
Why are you swimming? So you have no idea how you ended up there.
I fell off.
You just fell.
I backed off. It was too far. I took a step too far. I didn't know that it was an island green. I played the rest of the round, though, completely soaking. So, just
giving out $20 bills.
Giving out $20 bills. Yep.
Oh, that is
Channing's cheap as shit, too, because he didn't even help me out.
Didn't help you pay it out?
No.
So you had to pay the full $180.
I think we split it or something. I mean, we were just pulling. But we didn't care. We were just pulling money out of our pockets.
At that point, shit.
Oh, it didn't matter.
You know, one thing I remember about Jeff is that he always had his unbelievable faith in our quarterback.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean? Hell, you know what I mean?
Not just the Dolphins, man. You go back to Rex Grossman. That was
right. Probably back to Florida to Rex.
I have a real problem with – I love quarterbacks. It makes me sound like such a douche, and I am. But I have a real problem. I love quarterbacks who have swagger. I fall in love immediately the second I see a little bit. But that's not even John Beck didn't have swagger.
Yeah. Right. Chad Henne
has secret swagger.
Secret swagger?
Yeah, yeah. Deep within that boring soul.
Okay.
He's got some swagger to him. Like, I still see him in Kansas
Ryan
City.
Ryan Tannehill has swagger?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, here's what Gase would tell me about Ryan. You don't hire the gorgeous girl if you don't have that alpha in you. That's what Gase always said. And he goes, "I'm going to get that alpha out of him." And he did. And Gase came up to me the day before. And I love Lauren, by the way, but she is a prize catch for such a quiet guy like him. And if you don't have that alpha in you, you don't wind up with someone like Lauren. And Adam was convinced, and he came up to me the day before he blew out his knee and goes, "I got 17 playing like a monster." And we never found out exactly. Right. I still to this day believe we don't know.
But I didn't see the dog in him, though.
The dog was a little missing. And I thought he could get the dog out of him.
Right.
I don't know, man. I don't know why I guess I'm a hopeless romantic.
But what I'm hearing here, and I want to get back to that in a minute, but what I'm hearing here is that Lauren Tannehill is the reason why we – how many years with Ryan?
Yeah, no, that's just why Adam Gase thought he could get the dog out of Ryan.
Gotcha.
He believes that – and Ryan still – I'm going to go down a dangerous road here.
Yeah.
I'm telling you what's going to happen in Tennessee right now. And I'm not saying that Ryan is the answer. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I'm saying that – in Tennessee, what's going to happen is Marcus Mariota is going to get hurt.
Sure.
At some point, Ryan's going to come in, and he's going to have looked good at practice.
Yep.
And he's going to come in, and for two games, he's going to ball
out. Look like a hero.
He's going to have 110 passer rating.
Yeah.
And they're going to say at the end of the season, you know what? Marcus Mariota, why are we going to pay him when we have our guy in Ryan Tannehill?
He works hard. He studies. He does everything we ask. He can make all the throws.
It's going to happen. And
you're probably
right. I understand
people
get frustrated by that continued cycle with Ryan, but he passes the look test and he's got the arm and he's got the athleticism. And
here he goes.
This is why, man. But this is also why I'm not a talent evaluator. Right. I'm a sports reporter.
Right.
There's a reason for that.
So that's the Ryan situation and we get it. Talk to us about John Beck.
Yeah, John Beck. That's just a blown analysis. I don't know, man. Like, I don't know why it happens.
Now, you ended up doing a podcast with Brady Quinn, which is interesting.
Look on his face.
He's trying to figure it out.
Brady Quinn, man. Brady Quinn was
another
guy.
Passed the look test. Sure. And I will stand and say,
I think it's looks alone. I don't think he's like, right, looking at these good looking guys. Yeah, all these
maybe that's the problem I got here.
Yeah, he should have been modeling some stuff or whatever. But I stand by this. I believe, even with the career that he had, and Ted Ginn, you know, still playing and can still run like the wind, I think Brady Quinn was the right pick at that
moment.
At
number nine?
I think that that's who they should have picked. And they would have fucked up, but I would have think they I think they would have made the right decision.
Ted Ginn. Yeah, Ted Ginn had a decent career, too.
But he was never going to have that career here.
He's not a ninth overall pick. That's just a fast guy who blows the top off.
And he needs someone that has a cannon, like, you know, whether it's Drew Brees, whether it's Cam. That's, right. That's my thought. But I don't want to get into analyzing talent, because that's certainly not my strength.
I'm terrible at it, clearly.
But so when they pass on Brady Quinn and go to John Beck, you're thinking what?
Next Dan Marino. No. You know what I have a problem with? I have a real problem with I like people who like me.
That's a big problem, Jeff.
You know what I mean?
Wait. So
you're an asshole, you're out. I'm done with you.
If he comes in and he smiles and he says all the great things, and yes, sir, Mr. Darlington.
I will ride or die with you for life. I am a pathetic shill.
That's too funny. So just to make it feel even better about this situation, Marty Booker was on this show.
Love Marty Booker.
And Book was phenomenal. And a couple things we'll talk about today. But he said it got to the point where he was in the huddle. And John was, whether it was fear or confusion, and he's looking at his wristbands, whatever, and everybody's staring, and Marty would just say, and Marty would call the play. Because John just couldn't get it together. Yeah. And then they'd go up to, that's where your pick for the next Dan Marino was at.
No, that was not. I that was just a youthful mistake. Like, I finally now, you know, part of it is too, this is like a therapy session now.
That's great. That's what we're here for.
I feel like I also never... When Dante Culpepper signed with the Dolphins and he went out to practice, it was the first time where I saw someone throw a ball. And obviously that was a complete disaster. But it was the first time where I saw someone on the Dolphins practice field throw a pass that was like, whoa, that's different.
Like, that's a real arm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd never, when you cover the Dolphins for too long, as everybody can attest, you don't know what a quarterback's supposed to look like unless you go watch Marino clips.
Yeah.
And I think that was the problem too. I just didn't understand the game as, you know, now the more I'm kind of around it, the more you kind of can see it a little bit. You know, you can kind of understand it.
Their arms look like Rex's arms in college, right?
That's right. You know, Rex might have been the best arm I'd seen. That's right. To be honest.
It probably was.
Still to this, well, Ryan's got a pretty strong arm.
Yeah, Ryan's strong.
Josh Rosen does too, by the way.
Yeah.
But
he can spin it.
Right? Did you see my eyes light up? Yeah, Rosen, there it is. It depends. I don't know.
Got a little excited.
I don't know if Rosen likes me, so we'll have to wait that one out.
Jury's still out on that.
We'll
one.
Set up a meeting. We'll see if we can arrange something for you guys. I think if maybe someone gives him a hint, is that all it's going to take? Then he can get some good national press.
That's fine.
So we're going to change your image real quick here.
That's fine. I'll take that.
That is too funny.
This is Ricky J. Mark. In a world where sports radio continues to shift around the whims of corporate interests, we understand that the constant, unexpected changes can be exhausting from time to time. So that's why we think you should sit back, relax, and take five. Reasons, that is. So go ahead, grab your smartphone, and subscribe to the 5 Reasons Sports Network, available on virtually every podcast platform. We're South Florida's fastest growing on-demand sports media network. So you decide when you want to tune in. You decide when you want to listen. Because we know your life can be hectic, go ahead, fall in love with our lineup, including 5 on the Floor, 3 Yards Per Carry, The Fish Tank, Light-Skinned Opinions, and Cinco Razones, whenever you want. All you need is an internet connection. So go ahead, tune in. Try us out. We're by Miami, for Miami, and spreading rapidly throughout South Florida.
Need custom t-shirts made?
What about logo giveaways for trade shows or parties?
Wizard Creations will put your logo on anything and everything, so you got to find them at wizardcreations.com.
Yeah, the lowest prices around, best service is available. Wizard puts your logo on everything.
And they really do, Juice. Luke Freeman, who is the wizard at Wizard, is an amazing guy, and if you have something that needs to be branded, Luke is the guy who will get it done. He's done our fish tank shirts that everybody's been asking for. We've worked with him at the Jason Taylor Foundation.
organization for years. There's nobody better than Luke Freeman and Wizard Creations.
Yeah, so for all your custom merch needs, call our friends at Wizard Creations at 888-217-4084. That's 888-217-4084. Also, check them out at wizardcreations.com.
And when you do that, Luke said use the code FISHTANK. He's going to give you free setup and 10% off your first order. Free setup, 10% off. You're going to save some money and get great branded product. Wizardcreations.com.
Well, we've talked about, you know, you've covered a lot of different players, and unfortunately in Miami, you were in front of a lot of different coaches, a lot of different GMs.
Yeah.
But the one consistent, which is crazy to think about this, during your tenure was actually ownership.
That's right.
And you started, now you started when Channing
got here.
But you really kind of started, right. So, but you were here for the beginning phases of Stephen Ross.
I remember I got tipped off to a name. I heard that Steve Ross was looking to buy the Dolphins. I didn't know who he was. I had to look him up and Google. Yeah,
so you probably couldn't get into his neighborhood and wait for him to get home, huh?
Oh, just wait.
He put that blazer on that he was wearing in the press box.
Oh, I've got, no, he had me escorted out of a place once. That's actually a true story up at Time Warner Center.
Oh, we need to hear about it.
Dolphins called and Harvey Green called and apologized the next day. He's like, yeah, that wasn't good. It was when Sperano, Sperano Harbaugh thing had happened.
Yeah.
And Ross hadn't addressed it yet. And they were at that movie up in Time Warner's watching some movie he took him to. And I waited outside the place and Ross was like, I actually like Steve Ross a lot. Loves Coors Light. You would never think that.
No kid. Was he at the Bangy Dangy?
No, but that was
a Budweiser party.
That's right. Sorry.
But
you know me. And
but Ross has got a little dog in him too there. He's got some shit to him that you might not. You might not realize, but so that when I got that tip, I ended up just calling. What I realized was that when you would call before 5, it would go to this certain like answering service. When you call after 5, it was peculiar because it would just ring. And for some reason in my head, I'm like, that's something's different about when you call before 5 and after 5.
So I love the mind of a reporter.
Yeah. So I kept calling. And one time, hello. I was like, is this Steve Ross? He's like, yeah.
It forwarded to his call.
Forwarded to his penthouse.
Wow.
Time Warner Center. But if you ask him that, I'll tell you that's exactly what happened. I still don't know for sure, but I mean, that's what he just picked up the phone. It was like 8 p.m. That's like, my name is Jeff Darlington from Miami Herald. Look, I and this dude, Steve Ross's name was not in the minds or no one knew him in any regard with the NFL. He was a real estate guy in New York and no one in Miami even had heard his name. And I was like, I just got wind that you might be purchasing the Miami Dolphins from Wayne Huizenga. Wayne who? I don't know any Wayne Huizenga. I don't know what you're talking about. And
I love it.
Ends the call like 2 days later.
That's crazy.
He buys it. I didn't break it. I don't even know. I was like Sports Business Journal. But then once it went down, I had all like the backstory and everything. And next time I saw him, he was like, how the hell did you know that?
That's too funny. So it wasn't how the hell did you get into my, did you get a call into my penthouse, but it was how did you know about
when all that shit was going on a few years ago with everything was going on with Tana. They were looking for Gase before they hired Gase. I'd written this whole story, like kind of bringing the curtain back. And I was standing there with the microphone in my hand, ready to do a live shot. This is at NFL Network, I guess, at this point. And I'm standing there ready to do it. And the camera's right there. And Steve Ross is standing right there. This is the next day at the game. And I was like, Joe Rose is like, bro, love to come say hello to you right now. But dude, I can't be seen talking to you. Like, no one would talk to me that day, right?
That is too funny.
And Steve Ross was standing off to the side. And he, I was like, what? And he's like, you about to go on? I'm like, nah, I have a minute. He comes over. He's like, shakes my hand. He goes, how the hell do you know so much about my team?
Wow.
He starts to walk away. And I'm like, we could talk about it at some point.
Yeah.
Mr. Billionaire.
Right,
like,
right.
That's a great compliment.
But I actually really like Steve Ross. I think that I understand he gets a bad rap for, you know, some being maybe clumsy at times.
Orange carpet. Were you a fan of the orange
terrible,
carpet?
Terrible. Okay. Terrible. But, you know, then Tom Garfinkel has done everything tasteful since. And that's really
fair.
That's really Ross's hire there. But, like, really just, I just think Steve Ross cares deeply about the Miami Dolphins, is willing to give up every bit of resources to see them be successful. He oftentimes listens to probably too many people. And I think that that's something that he's trying to overcome and get his thoughts streamlined. But in general, I actually think that Miami Dolphins fans, if they really understood the care and the devotion that he has for the team, that he is truly, in every sense, trying to get it right. And there are not a lot of owners that you can actually say that about.
He must have been really nice to Jeff.
Yeah, sometimes.
But actually, not really. That's funny I say that. See, maybe I do like people that don't like me, too.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like he's got respect for you.
Yeah, we have mutual respect.
Yeah, and basically validated everything you wrote when he said, "How do you know?"
Oh
so
no,
much
it was 100% right. I knew that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Anything you had a question about?
I got some calls the night before that made me realize that was very. It was all very true.
You know, Jeff, this team had a lot of lows while you were part of the organization.
When those highs going to happen? Keep me home
exactly
a little bit more.
Right. Exactly right. I think the lowest of all lows is the 1-15 season. Yeah. Cameron.
Yeah.
How hard was it covering the team it was
just,
during that? Man,
you know, like going in the locker room and going up to those guys every day. Yeah. Like I remember finally just you just have to go up to him and be like, man, I don't want to ask you this and you don't want to answer it. So let's just do this and get it over with and move on, you know?
Right.
Because it's exhausting for everybody.
Exactly.
Losing sucks.
Exactly.
Like, I don't want to cover a losing team.
And guys who are not used to, you know, there were some guys in that locker room.
Well, I mean, it's hard to go 1-15. It really is, but they made it look pretty easy at times.
Was it Joey Porter on that team?
Yeah.
Was that the year? I think that might have been the year when was Jason on that team?
He was.
So Joey came in the locker room one time, and it was getting kind of like heated. I think this was that year, and everybody was around Joey Porter's locker, and Edgar Thompson was there and asked Joey Porter, do you have any residual effects from your knee? Your knee injury, do you have any residual effects? And Joey looks up at him, and he wouldn't stand up. He'd just stay seated for his interview, which was always a pain in the ass, too. And and it's just like, stand up.
At least he had clothes on.
Yeah, right. Yeah, some guys would do that,
too. We'll talk about that in a minute.
So he goes, residual? Man, you don't got to use those big words on me. And so the next day in the Herald, I write in the notes section, you know, Joey Porter in life might be many things. A comedian, sure. A boxer, he could do that. A football player, obviously great at that. But a spelling bee champion, he'll never be that. And in quotes, residual? You don't got to use those big words on me. Or like explain the situation, right? So the next day, because I'm like, no, man, you can't like...
So you were sticking up for the reporter.
Yeah, kind of, because he was always jabbing. I liked Joey. Again, he liked me. So, but I did that, and the next day in the locker room, he walks in, he's like, where's Jeff Darlington? He's got his shirt off. He's like, you know, greased up, swollen, just beautiful specimen of a
and
man.
Half fucking crazy.
Crazy.
And
all these reporters, by the way, that I had done this for to back, they're standing in the middle, and I'm off to the side, and they all just go, right over there.
Yeah, right.
Oh, no, we saw Jason Cole get knocked on his ass.
Yeah, that's right. And Joey walks over, he's like, okay, now I know who I can mess with and who I can't, okay, and he walks away. And I go on this, and Jason comes into play here. I go up to Joey a little bit later on. I'm like, Joey, man, like, I do want to apologize. I wasn't trying to embarrass you. I just thought, you know, we could both talk shit to each other. If you can talk shit to us, we can do the same to you. And he goes, man, it's all right. And he's like, all of a sudden, calm, peaceful Joey. He's like, I was just a little upset because I was in the parking lot and Jason Taylor came up to me and said, you don't know what residual means.
You know, JT was going to clown him quick.
You know it.
Oh, that's fantastic. From the guys who tell you they don't read the papers.
Right,
that's right.
They will
right.
find that
that's
shit.
Right. That was what 2007 was like.
Oh,
right there.
My God. That's hilarious. Yeah, Joey was, I mean, nobody at that point, you know, it didn't take long for Cam to lose the locker room.
Oh, yeah. Joey was the leader.
The catalyst.
Well, he was one of them.
Well, him and Trailer. Keith Trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? You heard that story about that flight?
No.
You heard a different story with Keith Trailer.
You know the story on the flight.
With Cam?
Yeah.
I don't know the story.
Where it was like a fight on the plane coming home, and Keith got ugly. No, you're talking about the one in the team meeting where he got dressed down.
Yes.
Yeah. And then at the end of the thing, Cam goes, okay, anybody else have anything else?
That's the one that I was talking about. Yeah. But tell us about the plane.
The plane was, I mean, I don't want to, I really don't, not because I'm trying to keep it private. I don't remember all the specifics.
And you weren't
details.
There, which I understand. You wouldn't have been on the flight.
But I just don't remember the details, so I don't want to like out anybody. But it got ugly.
Fair.
It got ugly. And no, I think what happened was it got so ugly that I think Cam was going to like kick Trailer off the team or something.
Off the plane?
And that's what led though, like to the, everybody's like, no, you're not kicking him off the team. Like that kind of thing. And it became like I think that is what almost led to, if I have the timeline, that's a long time ago, but that's what like started to, that was the beginning.
It was a lot of things.
For him. Yeah.
I mean, he went right after, you
JT
know,
with
he
the,
went after JT.
Remember the smoothies?
I do.
That was your thing, right?
It was our thing.
I loved you guys brought that smoothie bus to the facility.
Yeah, yeah. So the story here, Juice, is, and this is, you know, there were a lot of things, right? His draft pick and turned the thumbs this way and not that way and the whole thing. But, you know, we got a nonprofit organization here and we're doing good work. And Jason announces in partnership with a smoothie company that I'm not even going to mention at this point, that we were going to raise $10,000. They were going to match every time you bought a smoothie. They were going to make a matching contribution to the Jason Taylor Foundation. And we were going to take underserved kids to Cool Gear for the school year and give them $300 each to buy new clothes. Some kids who have never had clothes that didn't come from Goodwill or, you
Jason
know, or
Taylor, who is bigger at this point. I mean, and now too,
defensive
but like
player of the year,
yeah, even off the field, like everything he was doing, like
all those
it was
things.
Always just such good stuff. It was not like a attention grab.
And Cam Cameron sees it happening and goes up to Harvey, and Harvey would be pissed that I'm telling the story, but fuck it. He goes up to Harvey and says, that is one of the most selfish things I have ever seen an individual do on a football team.
Selfish.
It was, wasn't it because he put the backdrop or something that didn't have the dollar? It was ridiculous, whatever
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, it was wow. something.
Hey, three words, pick your battles.
Yeah, exactly. Well, how about three? Win a game. You know, like how about those three words?
That's
but
a good battle,
so like that was one of them. And then he just decided he was going after all the, you know, and there's certain guys that come in, and Jeff, you cover it, that there's certain coaches that know they need the alphas, that
yeah,
they need
right.
guys that can go in and win, and they and
well, you have to
guys,
recognize the alpha to be able to do that.
Well, right, that's exactly. And then there's guys who are scared of it.
They're not being intimidated
and,
by the alpha.
And
yeah.
there are guys who don't want anyone to be bigger than them. And
yeah.
I think that they,
Jason,
I think they hide under the guise of nobody's bigger than the team. And I think that that's some bullshit because
it's, nobody's bigger than them.
That's exactly right. You know,
Parcells is an interesting one, though, because he was a pain in the ass with Jason with the Dancing with the Stars.
He was a pain in the ass with Jason from day one.
Right.
Yeah.
But in some regard, I think that was trying to set a culture more so than it was. I also believe he has a massive ego. I'm not going there.
You think?
What?
Look at
no.
his look at his
no
way. But so you think it's the same? You think it's the same complex there?
I think it's a little different because Parcells at least
has
done it.
Yes,
now
that's my point.
Exactly right.
Belichick
so,
doing
so,
it is, yeah. is different.
Right. Well, and it's interesting you bring up Belichick because I think if you look at Parcells with Belichick and without Belichick, it's interesting to compare records. But Parcells is in the Hall of Fame and he's earned that
sure.
and those things. I just think he got to a stage in his career where he basically was selling his name.
No,
and,
no, that's fair.
Yeah. So that's yeah, absolutely.
But can you imagine that mentality that Jason had to deal with then? I mean, Jason was doing things that now is considered completely mainstream. Now right. everybody's got a marketing guy for that purpose.
Everybody's doing it. Yeah. yeah
you
exactly
you want
right.
to do a story with somebody that like Jason. If I was doing a story about Jason, I'd be calling you, not
right.
Harvey.
And
now.
Not Harvey.
Right.
Yeah. yeah. And that's kind of the world that it is. But we were always respectful of the process. But see, Parcells, and I'll go back even further. Part of why
now
Parcells
it's time for this
big.
Is Seth's
yeah.
therapy
yeah.
session.
You know,
now.
And, you're exactly right. And I try and stay away of it. And look, I'm biased as hell. There's no question who signs my paychecks and who's one of my best friends. But I'll tell you a little story here, and you'll appreciate this. So when JT decides, well, actually, this is when he's coming back, I think, because part
after the Redskins,
this is after the Redskins. And he decides that he's coming back to Miami. And John Clayton is in communication with Gary Wishard. And that's what it goes down to. Parcells and Gary Wishard
they
hated
clashed.
Each other. They
well,
fucking hated
everything
each other.
Gary was doing was against Parcells.
Everything he believed in. Yeah. But the funniest line Gary said, and I have to say it now, Gary, God rest Gary's soul.
God, man, what a legend.
Gary would say, he goes, you know what the fucking problem with Parcells and Tony is? They're fucking Jersey guys. And Jersey guys want to be New York guys, and they can't be. That was his line. He said, fuck him. And he hung up the phone. I was like,
wow.
Wow,
that's harsh.
Yeah, it was pretty
By
intense.
By the way, I'm from New Jersey.
I thought you loved it. No, you said that earlier. So I thought you'd like
yeah.
So anyway, you know, JT's coming back home after all the stuff that's happened. He goes to the Redskins and he's leaving $8 million on the table and he's going to take this $1 million deal and he's going to come back to Miami. And he calls John Clayton. And John is going to run this big national story. And he gets a quote from JT and they post it. And Harvey calls me chewing my ass. I'm like, Harvey, what the fuck are you chewing my ass for? This is a positive national story about your franchise. Like,
yeah.
who gives a shit about your franchise? This is a positive. Forget that it's JT. Like, John Clayton is saying this great stuff. This is a positive national story. And you're chewing my... It's a different culture here. Blah, blah, Coach Parcells. Blah,
you just
blah,
got
blah.
Ripped.
And
yeah.
I'm like, well, wait a second.
Right.
Like, what was leaked here? He's signing with your team. Well, this is not the way you do it. Blah, 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 blah. And they say all these things. So then the next day, there's a story about that Armando Salguero posts that JT was sat down and told this, that, and the other, and he's not going to be bigger than the team. And this is what Parcells said to him, and this is what Tony, and that like JT was sat down like a child and lectured when he got in. And I call Harvey. I go, Harvey, I have nothing but respect for you. You gave me my start in this business.
Yeah.
I said, But fucking don't ever call me and tell me what those guys are saying, because they're going to bitch about a positive story that John Clayton wrote, a national fucking guy who breaks news that John Clayton wrote a story that somebody's signing with your team and wrote how positive it was. And the next day, you've got an insider's take. I don't know how he got that. I go, I know exactly how he got it. I go, because fucking Parcells talks to one guy in this entire market, and it's Armando, and everybody in the media knows it. He won't talk to anybody. He won't do anything public, but everybody knows he talks to Armando. And fucking Armando calls me and he goes, you fucked me. I go, what do you mean? He goes, hey, did you tell everybody? Parcells didn't talk to him for 6 months. He said he shot him
six
down.
6 month probation?
Yeah. That's right.
You know what Parcells used to call Harvey? Five alarm? Because every time he'd show up, there was a five-alarm fire.
I was like, that's fucked up. Don't sit here and tell me what I can do. And then you're going to do the same damn thing. So anyway, that's my little therapy
session. That's your therapy session. I understand, man.
Well, look.
So let's tighten up that Cam Cameron real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got the one moment they did win the game.
Yeah, Greg Camarillo.
One moment. That how one sad moment. Is that? It was like Cam Cameron era. The time he won a game.
But there are truly are moments that I remember, like, in my career, like actual plays, the Wildcat game in New England, specifically remember that vividly as one of my favorite football memories.
Oh, man, everybody's. What else do we have, pretty much?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
The other that I was – I'm thinking about things that I was at, and that's – the funny thing is, in terms of excitement and adrenaline, the David Tyree catch, that's how crazy that Camarillo play was. I'm putting it up there with these – plays. What was the other? Tim Tebow, Demaryius Thomas across the middle in overtime to beat the Steelers.
Pittsburgh, yeah.
And that play, those are the ones that I can remember that caused people in the press box to like come out of their seats and be like, what just happened? Yeah. You know, and everybody just went insane. Greg Camarillo, who one of my favorite Dolphins of all time, speaking of.
Great guy.
Yeah. And really he liked me, so I was fine with it.
Good guy, too.
I love Greg was a nice dude.
Greg didn't like you. You had a problem.
Yeah, right. What would you have done for Greg Camarillo not to like you?
He's a great dude and a good player, man, too. Yeah.
And he was solid.
A superstar for that week afterwards.
Oh, man. Loved it.
Go to any Publix or Winn-Dixie.
I talked to him years later in San Diego, and it was still like that. Dolphins fans still come up to him.
How could you forget it?
Talk about that.
The sad part is that the fact that you compared that to a Super Bowl game-winning catch.
David Tyree. And I'm talking specifically for me.
Understood.
That I was there.
No, but I mean,
the energy had built so much. Like, the tension had built so much that was the release. That was the air out of the building, you know?
Man. I got kicked out of parking lot after that game. We stayed so
that's
long
the game?
Partying.
A little rowdy?
Yeah, I mean, we waited so long for a win that year, you know, and we stayed and we just partied like we
now,
won
did
the
you,
Super Bowl.
Did you hang with that whole crew, like Mad Dog and Encephalo and those guys?
No. I was Bob, still, you know, I was Bob still a super fan at that point. I had season tickets, you know, I had the tickets in the end zone.
40 people sitting in the end zone with them in the OJ section.
Really?
Yeah, first row and second row, we had all our
Was that the foundation
family.
Or something? Or
no,
just
our friends just, we all bought tickets. You know?
Really?
So I was sitting in the first row. I remember that game like it was.
Yeah. You're a super fan?
Oh,
for
man.
Years, man.
Still
I had
a
no
super
idea.
Fan.
That's because you were too busy checking your MySpace account.
Oh, man. I was trying to roll like Juice did.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Juice at Blue Martini a couple times.
Oh,
and was like,
man.
Here we go.
That's what's up.
I had some good time.
Well, he needs to go listen to the Wale episode.
The house.
We talk about the ball up at OJ's house all the time, the basketball games, what have you. And Wallake, he said he'd come to the games, but not for the basketball. That it was for the legendary
pool party.
It was
really?
His house afterwards.
I mean, I didn't cover you. What was your last year?
01.
'01. Okay.
Officially 01. I didn't play. I played like '99 and a little 2000. That was it. Though.
Yeah, but hey, don't say you still get that. You get that accredited season.
Yeah,
don't cheat yourself from that. You earned that damn season. Yeah, that was a wild. But what I was saying was, and I understand you were making that comparison. But any player that's here, people talk. It felt like they won the damn Super Bowl, which is it's a sad indictment on what that season was. But it also was that euphoria.
But that's what's funny. Like, the Miami Miracle was cool. That was incredible play and got a lot of attention, but I still don't think it was nearly as impactful on the build up. The tension wasn't there. Like, it was a bummer of a season, but it wasn't to the point where it was like, how
16 was
win?
Likely was a possibility.
That's right. And that was before the Lions had done it, so they would have been the first team, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And then, I mean, this was what, 12, 13 games in a season? I don't even remember.
13. Yeah. 13.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and they damn near lost that one, right? Because Billick decides not to go for it.
That's right.
And they kicked the field goal.
So, it went 2005 trying to think. I got down here. 2005 was Saban. 2 years of that. Cam Cameron. Sperano and then Philbin?
Correct.
And then, gosh.
Yeah.
But were you here for Philbin? Because 2011 was your last year, and that was JT's last year.
I was here for the first Philbin season, right? I think I was here for the first Philbin season, then I got the hell
maybe
out.
Maybe in the off season, yeah.
And then went to NFL. Because that was the year that Tebow, I was in Denver the whole time covering Tebow.
I bet you were. You put that Gator shirt
on. Another, give me another, swaggy little quarterback.
Did you think he was going to do it, that he was going to overcome all
that? I love that story, man. I love that story. And I wasn't tight with Tebow because we weren't at Florida at the same time. But the PR guy in Denver, Pat Smythe, we were at Florida
Pat's
at the same
good
time.
People,
you know,
man.
Pat, yeah.
Great people.
Yeah, he was on the he was a sports information director. He was like an intern under Steve McClain when I was on the school
paper.
I didn't realize
that he came from Florida.
Yeah, so me and him have known each other in the same capacity for 20 years now. And that year, he kind of introduced me to Tebow and would get me like time with Tebow all the time, and it was just fascinating. I love any time that like someone takes the sports world and turns it on top of its head. Yeah. Like I loved it from the peripheral, like I an up close view, but I loved watching the reactions of everybody and how
sure.
The conversations that it created. That's the most fun thing to me in sports. People hated it so much, but I loved it. I loved that people hated it so much.
That's good.
I did too, but that was the Gator in me. I had everybody coming at me and they loved to root against me.
I wasn't even rooting for him or against him. I just loved watching it.
Yeah.
I loved watching that this conversation that it didn't matter if I was talking to my grandmother or the ardent sports fan. Everybody wanted to talk about Tebow.
I had Xfinity came to my house recently and the guy was a huge Dolph fan. But he was a huge Tim Tebow fan. He wanted an autograph for his Dolphin wall, but he had a Tebow.
He was probably at that day when they had
a Tebow shrine, he said, as well.
UF Day?
I mean? Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that, right? Because I was going to say, so your final season was 2011, right?
I was covering that for the NFL Network.
You were? Okay. So, yeah, so 2011, that was JT's final season. I would say there's two things that stand out to me from that season. And one is that it was JT's 15th and final year, and so obviously that journey and what have you. But the other was that game. And that the Dolphins decide to do a Florida Gator Day.
That was Mike D, right?
It was, I want to put him on blast here, and he's not going to be happy with me because he's a friend of the show. But I think it was a combination of Mike D and Nat Moore.
Yeah.
I think Nat's vision was that there are, that,
I love Nat,
you know,
that's an all-timer.
But, and I think there was going to be the Florida State game, and there was going to be the UM game. I think they had that in the plans, and it just worked out that the first one was going to be the Florida game.
Yeah, that was the first and the last.
Yeah.
That was a bad decision. That was a bad decision.
To say the least, yeah.
That was up there with the orange carpet.
Don't tell Nat. That was up there with the orange carpet?
Yeah.
But the orange carpet never impacted or made you feel like it impacted what was happening on the field.
No, yeah. That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah.
It was bad in that stadium, man. It was
Tebow, man.
Man, oh, man.
Well, so there
Tebow
were,
mania was crazy in there.
I mean, the University of Florida, when I was in school, there were, whatever, 35, 40,000 students. And I think like 60% were from the state and 40% were from South Florida. So you can imagine you're going to celebrate Florida Gator. There's a ton of Dolphins fans who are also Gator fans, which is probably not making our five rings folks here happy either.
But it was more about Tebow.
It became about that because he became God of Gainesville.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I mean, I remember going
that
up to.
Unbelievable when I think about that.
Like that, he had a. I mean, he came in and won.
Do you remember the noise?
Well, that was
the crowd, the weirdness? Yeah.
Oh,
like,
the whole thing was weird. And he was god awful. It was a classic like 15-0 game. It was what that entire season was for him. Yeah. And then that shit just started to happen.
And that was the beginning. That was the first one. That was the first like
that's what
Tebow
set up
miracle.
The whole. That's exactly right.
I'll tell you, man. You talk about my whole thesis on that whole Tebow thing was like
sacked
him
six times.
I don't care who you believe in or what you believe in terms of religion. You know, live and let live. But if you believe in something as strongly as he did in something, it's amazing the power that can have.
Yeah,
I'm not. I like.
Have you heard of the impossible sit up?
What's the impossible sit up?
You got to see that one.
We'll have to play back the Mike Pouncey story, but the Pouncey brothers, I guess there's something called the impossible
sit-up. Was Pouncey on here?
Yeah.
We had both of them together.
That was good.
Yeah, so you'll have to go back and listen to that. But they, you know, they said the same thing you did, that was just him, that there was nothing fake about it, that's what he believed,
no.
There was nothing he couldn't do.
So strongly.
And so the impossible sit-up was a gag that I guess was a military thing, but you would hype a guy up thinking that he couldn't do this sit-up, and they'd blindfold him, and then somebody would put their ass ass in his face and make them do the sit-up. And so they hyped him up for an entire week. For an entire week, they hyped up Tim. And he said, you don't tell Tim Tebow anything's impossible because nothing is. He's Tim Tebow.
That's right.
And he was like, oh, and he gathered all these people around and they set him up. And it didn't go over real well with Tim.
No, not at all.
And it was Marquise who...
He got really close with Mar- Tebow did kind of get a little antsy about things like that.
Yeah. They said he laughs about it now, but at the moment, everybody had to put the cell phones away and they shut it down. They went into PR mode real quick.
Really?
But it was revealed here on the Fish
Tank.
That's
amazing.
The impossible
sit-up. That's a great story. I got some good... I can't tell this.
I
won't say the name, but there was one time in a Broncos practice. I won't say who it was, but there was a Broncos practice where Tebow was threw this pass that it was that year. It was just a duck. I mean, it was just like end over end, like, you know, like hit the practice facility. It was as bad as you could imagine. And this coach turns to him and just goes, "Hey, Tim," in front of the whole team. "Are you sure you're not right-handed?"
Wow.
Damn.
Wow.
Yeah. That way.
Another time that year, John Fox is walking over toward where all the reporters are, and Tebow's doing reps afterward, and he throws this one pass that literally, very literally, goes end over end. And Andre Caldwell was on the team, and he catches the pass, but it was like I mean, end over end.
Catching
ball.
A kickoff.
Yeah, and Fox turns to the media and sees that we all see it, and we're kind of like having this awkward moment. Like, it's after practice. There's no reason anybody has to comment, but Fox just breaks the awkwardness. He goes, "Son of a bitch, caught it."
I love it. That's
great.
Oh,
that's
God.
Great. Well, Jeff, before we let you get out of here, man, you know, we talked a little bit about everything.
Did I get in trouble? I don't know.
No, I think you did. You
I
did
think
great,
so.
Man.
You did pretty good.
But before we let you
Next
get out
time
of here,
you're in.
Let's a little bit about the current team and Coach Flores and you know what you see with the guys now and the new coaching staff and everything.
Look, I think that it's great that they're just flying under the radar. Like, I think that that's exactly the kind of culture that Flores wants to set early on. And you know, you talk about people, coaches who try to set cultures that actually is not about the team, but about not being bigger than the coach.
Sure.
We're talking about that ego. Brian Flores does not have that. I know two people up in New England who know him very well. And one of the guys who's worked with him forever. And I remember when it was going down that Flores might get the job, this one guy called me. He's like, "Man, like, nobody's heard of Brian Flores, but I swear this is an unbelievable man. Like, he is an unbelievable person."
Nice to hear.
What that means, how that translates, I don't know. Obviously, I don't know. I'm terrible at assessing these kinds of things, but
with Josh Rosen here,
Rosen, he just seems like I appreciate what they're doing from a salary cap perspective. I know everybody talks about tanking. Look, I don't think you can call it tanking, but it's being responsible about your salary cap. I don't think that the team cares. They would probably like to have the first overall pick, but they're not going to deliberately do so. And I don't think they did things this year with the intention of trying to get the first overall pick. I think they did things to try to be responsible and get the salary cap in the right place. And as a result of that, it's probably going to lead to some tough times this season. But that's just being responsible. At some point, you've got to do that. Right. You can't do cash over cap every year, as the Dolphins have done the past several years, and expect to get there. So I like the responsibility they're taking. They're being grown men and holding each other accountable. You know, where it goes, I don't know, but you got some grown men in that building right now.
And who would those folks be? I mean, are there
people... Well, Flores, but I think Greer... I think Flores
so you're
is
saying
that guy.
Overall,
in general, and Greer's an interesting one for me because he's been here for 15 years, and I'm like, he keeps getting, you know, held over and promoted, and I'm like, I mean, he's kind of got to face the music a little bit here too in terms of, and now this is his shot. It's his rodeo. You know, there's nobody that can take the blame other than him at this point when it comes to personnel. He's got that power, and we'll see what he does with it. And again, I mean, we can talk about whether we like somebody. I really enjoy Chris Greer.
Right.
And everybody who works with him loves Chris Greer.
He's
Adam
a great,
loved him.
Great
everybody
person.
Thinks he's just a great man. So if that translates, there are great men in that building. If that translates to the field, I think that the future is at least bright. But as I know in South Florida, it's show me time. It ain't tell
right.
me time.
Exactly right.
No question. Well, we remember a time where there were games that were won, and that hope was, didn't get to the Super Bowl, but at least it was a competitive team every
good.
Year. Yeah.
Greatest defensive performance I've ever seen in my life.
In 2005.
Even more so than J.J. Watt, I'd say. I'm serious. Jason Taylor, Joey Porter, and J.J. Watt, in my opinion, have had in the past since, 15 years, three most dominant NFL seasons of any defensive players.
Yeah.
And two of them happened in Miami.
How about that?
Jason Taylor that year in 2005, I've never seen a defensive player have more of an impact on the football field to this day than that.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. He was.
I did not pay Jeff to say this. No, his professional opinion.
You did give me a nice leather bag.
Yeah.
When Jason Taylor left, you gave us all leather bags, and
you're blowing our secret here.
Yeah, but I had this moral dilemma because you're not supposed to accept gifts.
Yeah.
Now I'm like a whatever.
We didn't get a whole lot of them turned back. We did a few people turned them back, but we didn't get a whole lot of them turned back.
I think I said I did. And I put it in my closet for like a year.
Yeah.
And then
there's a statute of limitations on that stuff. So we did. So what Jeff's referring to is that JT.
What was the brand? It was a nice leather bag.
It was Kenneth Cole.
Kenneth Cole.
It was Kenneth Cole. So, you know, he put a, we did, I think, the billboard thing, actually took a full page ad out, mm-hmm. both in the Herald and the Sentinel, and thanked the fans. And he wrote personal letters to each of the members of the media that covered them.
Seth wrote personal
letters. Did I say he or we? So there were letters that were signed by Jason that were sent to each member of the media. And I had to let him know who some of those folks were. All kidding aside,
he
wanted to thank all the guys who covered him, and you know whether it was he felt it was fair or unfair, what have you, and good, bad, or indifferent. And a couple guys did call to turn back, and it was interesting to see who had to turn back the bags and who didn't.
That was a conversation. Right. I remember that.
Good stuff, man.
I know people were surprised. There were a couple times we love to surprise you guys.
What goes on at a bangy dangy, gentlemen?
That's it, man. That's
man,
it.
Life is different now.
That is great, man.
Two kids living in a little, you know, freaking neighborhood, and just thinking about that bangy dangy.
Well, we're glad that's part of what we do here in the tank is relive the old days and tell the great stories.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
But we sorry we ruined the rest of your day or maybe your week. Yeah. But no, I'm sure you wouldn't have it any other way.
Yep.
And we appreciate you taking time to come here.
No, man, this is great. I love what you guys are doing. It's awesome that I think it's just great that, you know, because it is a community down here and misery loves company at times. And we all have been through it and we all kind of, you know. Well, I think see it in a little different lens than maybe people outside the community.
Yeah, we try and talk about some of the fun stuff too. Although it's funny, actually you say that, I saw a tweet recently and somebody said, you know, I love the Fish Tank, but it's just a combination of being, you know, loving the show but also being outraged. And he said, I love the show because of the candor and the incredible stories. And you hear things that you would never hear, and the guys are crazy, and it's funny. But as a fan, I feel like some of these things got in the way of winning. And so the response, but the response was, you know, there's teams that win Super Bowls that have crazier stories than this.
Cowboys, go back to some of those Cowboy teams.
And it was me, and I responded on it. I was like, but what got in the way of winning was people were better at coaching, playing, and building
teams.
Yeah, but that's what it comes
100%.
Down to.
100%. Dolphins fans should not feel like it's just crazy. I mean, I remember, who was the Seahawks?
Right.
The two guys, Percy Harvin and Doug Baldwin. It wasn't Doug Baldwin or was it Golden Tate? Got into a fight the night before the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And they won the next day.
Right. So, you know.
I'm sure that wasn't the first fisticuffs.
Percy Harvin probably got in a few fights.
It's easy
I think he and the quarterback didn't get along real well either.
Yeah, it's easy to blame. My point there, though, is it's easy to blame things retroactively.
Exactly right.
Yeah, absolutely.
When there's not the success. Yeah, there's. Trust me.
One day, Miami Dolphins.
The Dolphins did not win. The reason they didn't win games had nothing to do with Channing and Jeff losing on the golf course.
That's right. That was the offseason.
There it is.
Where was he playing at the time?
He was playing right away, I thought.
No, I just that was.
Oh, you're saying like was that during the season? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't
know. If it's a Tuesday, man, that's your day.
It was offseason. Right. No, it was definitely offseason. We wouldn't have done that in the regular season. I couldn't do that in the regular season either. I don't do that anymore at all. Man, this sucks.
So being that we've completely ruined everything.
You know, Channing was in my wedding. No. Last story. Channing was he read.
Wait, he presented in your wedding?
He came up to me afterwards and was like, first he like. He tells the story a little over dramatic, but he like stepped on my wife's dress as he was trying to walk around the back to go do this reading.
Did he really?
And he get up and he's like, yeah, we did lyrics. We didn't do like Bibles. And he did lyrics. He goes, all right, I got some lyrics from a man, Billy Joel.
Oh, geez.
And he does the reading. And after I'm like, my man, Billy Joel, you know, Billy Joel. He's like, man, never heard of him. He's Billy Joel.
So who, did you give him did you pull the passage or did he?
No. I gave him like some lyrics to read.
Right.
It was like,
he would have come in with that passage
of
joy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. He used to give me some, you know, some lessons on music and stuff like that.
I'm sure that he did.
We'll stop. We're in the Everglades one time. We're doing the story together and we're fishing together and there's literally alligators circling the boat. And I swear to God, he reaches in the water and grabs one by the tail.
And
he pulls this like little 3-foot gator out of the water and he's like, ah! And I'm like, man, what happens if like one of these gators, like what happens if this boat goes down? He goes, I'm just glad I can swim faster than you.
That's insane. Those little ones are cute, but they got a mama somewhere in there.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Well, again, man, really appreciate you being a part of it. Hope that we can get you back here, and we look forward to seeing all the great stuff that you're going to push out this season.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for diving in, Jeff. Cool.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, dog fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rocking with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Fans with attitude, okay, this one for them diehards. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tails, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie, bringing up stories we never heard to the public. Bet we love it, Dolphins fans never budget. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rockin' with OJ and Seth when you dive up in that fish tank. Dog fans were at a talk, we about to dive up in that fish tank.